the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
But first, to the story of a man who started his career in a car showroom in Donegal. Cathal Friel, who left school aged 16, has gone on to make millions in deals. He's brought four companies to the stock market and is about to IPO his fifth. His modus operandi is to pull a team together, sometimes using distressed assets, turn them around, and then float it on the stock market. Cathal, you're very welcome. We'll start with your newest venture, European Green Transition, which is buying assets in that area. One of them is a rare earth mine in Sweden.
Correct. European Green Transition is focused on ending in a green economy. So we all have known for the last 2-3 years there's enormous sums of money flowing into this inevitable and necessary transition from hydrocarbon economies to green economies. So one of the core things is rare earths. They're hugely scarce. They're generally found in Africa and Australia. But Europe has them. Europe didn't do any mining for really over 100 years because it had the colonies. The French went to New Caledonia. The British went abroad. The Germans went to, actually, believe it or not, parts of Africa. The Belgians went to the Congo. The transition now, there's a focus on Europe. And people don't know, during World War I and World War II, Sweden was the world's largest producer of iron ore and steel. It stayed neutral and it served both sides. So there's a long history of mining in Sweden, and the rare earths are needed for every wind turbine in the world. Those little black magnets, as a kid at school, we picked up nails with. Every wind turbine, offshore, onshore, needs about 0.5 ton of those magnets. And the magnets are basically almost 90% rare earths. So that's what we have in Sweden.
So that's one of the assets that you're involved in with this particular one. But when you put it together, Cathal, how did you get into this business?
Yeah, look, it actually is a quite circuitous road. Buying shares in small, fast-growing public companies happened by default. I ended up in a family business in Donegal in 81 as a 16-year-old. It was a pretty messy family business. But what it did have, my dad had a portfolio of shares. And throughout the 80s, while in Donegal, I used to go down to my local bank manager, AIB, Paddy McLaughlin, in Dunfanny, and buy a few shares. At that time, it was highly encouraged by people in Ireland to buy small cap. And a couple of the shares that basically got me out of Donegal. The family business never really created much value for me. I kind of washed his face. But over the 80s, I bought shares in Kingspan, about 10,000 in when I didn't really have it. It went up about 10x. I also put about 10,000 in the mid-80s in Tullow Oil. It went up about 10x. And a number of other small cap shares. And they were phenomenal, 5, 10, 20x. And that whetted my appetite. Step one, it allowed me to escape the family business. We sold it and I got out. It gave me a nest egg. And then I've always drifted back to being involved in small cap public companies because it's the only sector of the economy you can get 10, 20 times your money.
And going back to growing up in Donegal, and you're from Chrysler, and it was a big family, and your dad, it was a car business he had, was it?
Yeah, he had the Ford franchise for North Donegal, and late 79, 80, he got involved in another business, an adventure sport business. He borrowed a little bit too much money for it, and in 81, we might remember, interest rates went through the roof, and he struggled, and I was one of the middle kids who had seen an interest in the business. So he had trouble with the banks and he turned up. I was about to go back to school and he said, listen, you've got to come and help. And that was it. But that was pretty tough at the time. But
so you were only about, 16 then,
absolutely,
when you stepped up to do it?
Yeah.
That must have been tough.
It was pretty crap for about 4 or 5 years because he basically never really re-engaged in the business. It knocked him out. But as a 16, 17-year-old, we're all very resilient. Kids are resilient. You learn the hard way. Northwest Donegal, anybody knows Chrysler. You've got the Bluestack Mountains on one side of you and you've the Atlantic Ocean behind you. So you kind of have to fight your way to survive. But that's what really, I was able to buy shares up there in the far northwest in really exciting public companies through the local AIB.
And that made a big difference. But you still had this Ford business that when you took it over at the age of 16, it was struggling. and you had to try and make ends meet. I mean, was it very difficult? What kind of financial straits was it in? I mean, were the family in trouble because of it financially?
Absolutely. Look, it was kind of family secret, the reason I was swiped out in the middle. It was kept quiet as I didn't leave school at 16. AIB was probably going to take possession of the family house. The business had been struggling for years. Family business just had not been making money. So my dad felt he had 10 kids. So there's maybe a spare one in the middle I can pull out of college. He was very educational. Everybody else, he had a big push. Everybody had to go to university. But I think it's like a big family. Some people just decide, right, there's a spare kid in the middle. Out you come. You have to help us. And it's not dissimilar. It's at every farm in the country. There is a son or a daughter saying, right, you'll be kept home to run the farm. I was kind of brought home to run the family business. It was no different. And there's loads of family businesses, pubs, there's restaurants, hotels. It happens.
I mean, how did you feel about it? Would you have liked to have stayed in education and not taken up this pretty tough cross to bear?
I was, I better not do that. I was pretty seriously pissed off. The probably the biggest part would have been is actually memories goes back. It's funny, I'm turning 60 this year, but I still almost cry when I think of I had to leave. There was no choice. My dad said, look, you come out and get in and help me with the banks. Otherwise, you know, it's all over. So, but the biggest one would have been in November. I still remember Halloween 1981. I went back to the school thinking I was still kind of half there. All my friends would pass every morning the school bus. I was saying, oh, I should be on that. I remember actually getting a lift to the school hop in November 81 and the school teacher standing at the front gate at the entrance to the gym where the disco was, oh, you can't come in. I said, yeah. And he said, no, you're not a student. Go away. So I remember that made me very determined and drive. I knew I'd made a massive mistake then and said, ow, I'm definitely out of school.
And it just that must have hurt though.
Absolutely. Even the present day, I still remember the poor old school teacher. He was doing his job, but I was no longer a student. You can't come in here. But I remember probably the best thing ever. It made me determined to pull myself up, sort the business out and focus on education by night. So I went back to college at night and eventually got an MBA, the kind of slow, long road. But it worked. It did. Look, I'm here
so
today.
So you were building up that education as you were getting a little bit older while still running the business at the same time. And you did turn it around because you sold the company in the 1990s?
Yeah, look, in 1995, we managed to successfully sell it. Look, the price was public. It was sold for just over 100,000. So that didn't go very far. But going back to IPOs...
But you didn't lose the family home.
No, family home.
You turned it all
paid
around.
Paid the debts back. But the big one was that I managed to put a really, really nice nest egg, a multiple of the sale of the business, in shares that I acquired in public companies such as the Tullows, the Kingspans, small cap, fast growing companies.
Buying Kingspan shares, for example, what would have prompted you to go for them and to put in, as you were saying, about 10,000 that you kind of didn't really have?
I was driving through Monaghan one night in the mid 80s and there was a presentation being given by Gene Murta Sr. in the Four Seasons. And it was
Founded the company, yeah.
Yeah, and he was presenting a bit like I've been doing the last couple of weeks, looking for investors to back Kingspan. And then the Kingspan IPO has been run by Rada Stockbrokers, and it was actually high risk. They had a single product. They were making plastic central heating tanks, believe it or not, for heating oil. I bought the shares and bought a few more, and yeah, it piqued my interest. And if you think about it, the Irish stockbrokers saying, whoa, 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 it's terrible, Kingspan's leaving. But Kingspan started out as a small cap, smaller than basically our pool bag farm is today, which we're very focused on. But it has gone up 50x. If any of you bought shares in the IPO and sat back and did nothing, you could retire multiple times over in Kingspan alone.
And it's amazing how it can turn out. But so you then, you pursued your education in your own time afterwards, and you went all the way to doing a master's and MBA. So you would have been in this unusual situation because you didn't get to finish the Leaving Cert, yet there you were doing an MBA, and you ended up lecturing then as well.
Yeah, I remember the university course, thought it was very funny. They used to have a thing, eventually, look, at the end of the MBA, one or two of the students are kind of invited or offered a position to be a part-time teacher or a part-time lecturer. Most of them were too busy with their careers. I was determined. A lot of my other brothers and sisters had gone off to college. I'd missed it, and I was kind of being competitive and say, have you one of these, a master's? And some of them had. And I said, oh, have you been a lecturer? So I gave it a go. From 1990 to 95, I used to drive up from West Donegal to Jordanstown, Belfast, and teach on Thursday, Monday afternoons at 2 to 8 and Thursday after 2 to 8. I loved it. It was great fun.
After you sold the business, you had this bit of money that you had built up in shares, and there would have been some money for the business as well. You decided to take a year out and travel.
Yeah, just took a year off. I felt I never had more than a week or 10 days. Like all small business owners, I never had more than a week or 10 days off. I envied some of my brothers and sisters who had 3 months of the summer off while at university. No, they've been working in the summers, but I just went backpacking, probably slightly older, early 30s, went round the world, had great fun, backpacked on an absolute shoestring. I found occasionally I would stay in a nice hotel because I had a bit of money. I'd meet nobody. But by staying in the really cheap $2, $3 a night backpacker places in Asia, Africa, Australia, you'd meet some wonderful people. So it was great fun.
So it would have really opened up your mind to the wider world, and you know, you would have learned a lot from it.
Absolutely. Look, the big change. Most people who knew me before headed off backpacking, and it was basically Easter Monday, 1996, and they came back on Easter Monday, 1997, or Easter Good Friday, a full year. There was two Cahill Frails, the one who was a kind of shy, quiet Donegal guy, and then suddenly there was a very engaging outgoing. And what happened was, when you arrive in a backpacker in the middle of Asia, Laos, you can sit in the corner and read a book. Otherwise, you can put your head up and reach out and say, who are you? And it's full of people who are on their own. And I discovered when I came back that one skill that's lived with me the present day, if I go into a meeting room, I just walk up, first person I see, oh, put your hand out and say hi. 90% of the time, they'll say hi back. Most people are afraid to do it. I keep trying to teach my colleagues, my family. If you go into a room, just put your hand out, be careful, and say hi. Most people won't say not, won't return. And I learned that. So anyway, it was actually, I came back and decided to, right, need to get into business. And I decided I would come to Dublin.
And it must have been a kind of a sense of freedom about all of that. Having been at home, having worked so hard on the family business, missed out on things as a result of it, but, you know, got through it. There must have been a great liberation about all of that.
Yeah, look, it was lovely to leave the family business behind in Donegal, sold it, left the parents with a few quid, left the house intact, didn't get a fortune. And I had my little nest egg from basically buying and selling shares in small cap public companies. So I came to Dublin and decided, yeah, look, I'd try and build a career. And knew nobody in Dublin. This was 97. And I sent out like a business every week, 15 CVs. Email had just started. And literally over a 6 month period, did hundreds of interviews. Struggled to get a job because nobody could pigeonhole me what I wanted. And eventually I offered a guy, Jim Marr in All Finance. Jim, I'll offer work for free for 6 months. And within 12 months, he made me his deputy CEO. So that got me very involved in the Irish software financial services.
So you said you'd work for him for free, and you did.
Yep.
And then you became deputy CEO.
Within just 12 months later. Because I was, like, he saw the experience I had. I'd run a family business. I'd lectured. He was quite intrigued by somebody having an MBA. And yeah, it worked really well. And I kind of moved from there then into Merrion Stockbrokers and brought those core skills of hard work and curiosity and ability to try, give something a try. But bear in mind, I left Donegal as a family owner. I was in the software business. Then I got into Merrion Stockbrokers. And again, that recurring skill that I think everybody should try is adaptability, hard work and curiosity. That's the core skills that we look for in everybody who works with us.
You see, when you look at your own CV, and when you came back to Ireland and Dublin and you were applying for jobs, you didn't necessarily have contacts. That CV, having done those things, might have gone against you. And in reality, do you think that has changed now? Do you think that employers and business people are looking for someone they can't pigeonhole so easily, someone that has a variety of skills?
I think, Richard, life has changed so much. Now all those skills are valuable. It's very acceptable in the last 15 years for people to have multiple careers, multiple paths, multiple experiences, certain jobs, some of the professions. If you want to become an accountant, a doctor, a lawyer, yeah, you've got to show consistency. But for most business people, even working in multinationals, like we've got two companies I'm running, Poolbeg Pharma, like we've Luke O'Neill, who's in there, who's had multiple careers in the life science. He's one of the best known people in the life science sector. So Luke's with us in Poolbeg. we have a range of people in there with a variety of careers. And I think having that variety of careers is the new world going forward.
Do you need to have a bit of a brass neck at times in business? And did you develop one early or did it come later?
I wouldn't call it a brass neck, but being confident probably is a great skill. I think brass neck sometimes comes across as, the wrong way. I think having confidence of just trying something different is probably the best way, even if you're running the business or if you're career. Like regularly we would see people interviewing, coming in for jobs, and we don't try and pigeonhole them, come in for the chat and see where it takes us from there.
Your own life experience and career journey to get to where you are now has obviously, influenced your thinking on a lot of things. Has it affected your own views then about who you hire? Because you said there not so long ago in a newspaper interview that you wouldn't necessarily be mad about hiring sort of posh Southside Dubliners. Is that the case?
I'm glad you brought that up, Richard. I know you're living in Donegal with a fellow Donegal partner. I deep felt apology to half of South County Dublin. That was a kind of throwaway comment.
All your neighbours, Cahill, because you're living there, aren't you?
And my kids, they can say, what were you saying? However, look, there was a little bit of context. We all know Dennis O'Brien has always said he generally prefers country people. There's no preference. Look, being honest, within our staff, we have two companies we're actively running. One is Poolbag. Co-founders, that is with me, is Carl Dalton. She's very much a Southsider in Dublin. We're not, like, that was a throwaway comment.
But leaving that aside, I'm sure you didn't mean it literally, but you were getting at something. You were getting at a point about certain people with certain skills. It doesn't really matter where they're from, but people who have developed certain skills. Do you think that's important?
Yeah, I think where it comes from, Richard, and it was the people from the country, if you think of the lilac bus that comes up, loads of kids have to go to university in Dublin and take that express bus on a Friday night back to the country, back to Dublin on a Monday morning now, I gather. It used to be Sunday night. They're used to travelling. They're going where somewhere different. So I think, and even if you think people from a farm background, again, multinationals, the big pharma companies here say they have a preference of hiring people from a farming background because they've experience with mass milk pasteurisation. So a lot of the big pharma companies is something similar. And look, those ambidextrous multi-skills comes from family businesses, comes from farming. There's absolutely nothing wrong with somebody going to college, becoming a proper career. But there's this variety of people from the country, I think, people particularly from small business, a variety of farmers, that there's the innovation, there's risk. It's all instilled at such a young age. So in our businesses, and say we've a goal of keeping people who are flexible, hardworking, and I think curiosity is an amazing thing to have as well.
Given your own early days running the Ford dealership and from an early age and getting through all of that, and because the business was stretched, did it affect your view about borrowing and debt?
Yeah, look, I have an aversion. I hate debt. And because my father hadn't debt, I wouldn't have lived school at 16. Now, looking back, I would live my life all over the exact same way again. Okay, it was tricky 4 or 5 years from 16. But debt caused that. So I just have never had debt. I hate it. I spent all my life buying secondhand cars till recently. After 40, I celebrated 40 years working 3 years ago, the first time I bought a car. And just for the fun, I took a car loan out to see what it was like. That was it. So just for the fun. And it was a new car. I thought it was an outrageously expensive car. It was probably the price of 10 of my previous secondhand cars put together. So I took a car loan. But I think debt is very important. The issue when you're starting a business, if you've got too much debt, you've got too many outgoings. Most businesses people start, we bring people in on a modest salary and give them a chunk of equity. For instance, in Amrit Pharma, Joe Wiley put in $100,000, and 5 years later, he walked away with $35 million in cash. Rory Neilan put in $50,000 to Amrit Pharma and walked away with $25 million. That's pretty spectacular. So that's why I have this thing, be careful of debt. Debt is necessary, but I always think if you want to go in, and then again, where it comes, Rich, I think for some people, they're not going to start the business. They're going, you don't need it. But I think anyone wants to start, you have to have that little nest egg. You have to either go with a low salary for 3 or 6 or 9 months. And that gets you going.
And what about yourself, Cathal? Have you managed to put away quite a few millions from those deals?
I rolled it into the next one, Richard. Some people who sell their business and head off to the sun, I think I was very lucky. I sold the business, 33-year-old, headed off backpacking for a year. I don't think I'd ever do it again. So I don't think I'll ever retire. But I think most self-employed people will always do a day or two per week. It keeps us alive, keeps us interested. So no, retirement's not for me, but I'm not going to spend all
not ever. You said you're turning 60, but you don't think you might float more companies on the stock exchange. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, I'd love to do one a year, and that brings me to, like, my only sadness, I'd call it, is we're doing our fifth. I think, look, there's just a lack of interest in the Irish financial services institutes, regulators. If you think of the biggest companies in Ireland, Ryanair, CRH, Michael Smurfit, Paddy Power, they all started as very small cap public companies. The reason we love doing public companies, the reason we took Ambit from zero to 1.5 billion, the reason we took HVivo, Open Orphan, from zero to 300 million was public companies. Public companies, you can grow really fast. But my one aim over the next couple of years now, to my fifth, is that we have to go to London all the time. We use Panmure Gordon. At the moment, it's a very British organisation. They're wonderful. They love us. But unfortunately,
you'd rather do it in Dublin if the appetite was there.
I would so much love it. I have to spend 2-3 days a week in London because you have to build a network and do it there. I just think going forward, I'd love to say, look, folks, can we get people real? There was 17 stockbrokers in Ireland when I was selling cars in Donegal. If I hadn't invested in small cap companies, I would still be running the family business in Donegal.
And just on the point of the Ford dealership that you would have taken over at the age of 16, how did Ford feel about a 16-year-old becoming the dealer? They would have been, would they not have been a bit, what's going on here?
Yeah, it was fostered on. I think they could see the balance sheet because they're supplying you cars every week, and it was kind of, uh-oh. They did know me. I'd been familiar. Ford run, it's called the area manager, and he became familiar. I used to meet him. He'd come and stay in, or he'd visit the parents' house and have tea over the years. So they kind of knew it. The '80s, there were similar problems everywhere. There was family business in trouble. So by 17, I had the best fame. I was the youngest Ford dealer ever in Europe because dealerships are not in companies, it's in a personal name. So yes, it was fun. I stayed friendly with quite a few of them. They just said, right, go with the flow, see what happens. If you keep selling cars, you can remain a dealer. And that was basically how that happened.
So when you bought the new car with your first car loan not so long ago, was it a Ford, no?
No. Another one. We'll not say, well, we won't piss them off. It was a non-Ford, let's put it that way.
Well, Cathal Friel of European Green Transition, as well as several other listed companies, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Richard, thank you very much for your time.